land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Hope you had a lovely weekend. You know, since I've only been broadcasting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I find out that I have two Fridays in every week because I am so used to measuring, I guess, my days by when I was on air and when I wasn't. And now every Thursday I think it's Friday, and then I find out I have another Friday coming. So anyway, I have enjoyed it, folks, and it looks like it's going to work because all of you have been so coming forth with the sponsorship for the broadcast. And Jeffrey Bennett, if you are listening on Thursday nights, and I hope you are, he is our guest host, and he has just been doing some outrageous stuff. And as I told Jeffrey, I feel like I actually have a partner in this, and I can't imagine any other broadcaster that I would want to actually... I might give them a day if I was giving up a day, but to actually guest host on Sweet Liberty. So be sure to remember that on Thursday nights you will hear Jeffrey Bennett, and he is certainly worth listening to. Our spiritual message this evening is from Psalm 139, verses 23 and 24, and you've heard this a jillion times. Search me, Father. Know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. And as I've shared with you folks, that was put up on my wall in front of me, the broadcast wall here, back in 1998. And At the time I just did it. I didn't really think about why I did it. And more and more and more, I have realized how it is just everything. Jesus said to know yourself, and that there is nothing more to know. And so this little prayer means everything to me, and it's why I share it with you so often. We have a guest this evening, and I believe that you're going to very much appreciate the information that is going to be, not that it's good news, of course, folks. There's not a whole lot of good news that we have to share, as you know. But the hate crime bill, I have not talked about this with you. And Reverend Ted Pike is with us this evening. He has done an outrageous amount of research and work on this, and has a video on the dangers of the hate crime. I watched the video, and it is definitely worth watching. And Reverend Pike has the National Prayer Network, and they've actually, your father started, didn't he, Reverend Pike?
Yes, we started that back in the early 1980s as
right.
part of the National Day of Prayer.
National Day of Prayer. And you've authored a book titled Israel, Our Duty, Our Dilemma, which I've read, and I actually quoted fairly heavily from it in a book that has been in progress that I've been writing for on and off for past, I guess, 2.5 years. And I've also, you had sent me the videotape, Why the Middle East Bleeds. And that, to me, was just, I just have never seen anything that was so thoroughly researched on what's happening with the Palestinians and what Israel, what part Israel is playing in it. And then you have another one titled The Unholy Alliance, which I did watch part of, and then I started watching again this evening, regarding the plan, the partnership, the alliance between Zionism and the so-called, well, they call themselves Christian Zionists today, helping to bring the plan for world dominion in. And this is a lot of what the book that I'm writing is about, Ted.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, folks, I'm going to let Reverend Pike take over here. You had sent me an email on the situation that occurred, and I don't know where you want to start, but you can start where you'd like. And the situation here in Pennsylvania is a good example, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Well, Jackie, the legislative trend in all countries of the Western Hemisphere, in Europe, in Canada, in Australia, is towards so-called anti-hate laws. And most people aren't familiar with these laws. I mean, most people in America. But in countries like Sweden and Canada, they've lived with so-called anti-hate laws for a long time. And the direct result is loss of freedom of speech, the silencing of the pulpit, and even a silencing of talk radio. And I have been battling the huge federal anti-hate bill for more than 4 years now. It's called the Local Law Enforcement Enhancement Act. And basically what it does is it's a massive invasion of states' rights in law enforcement, civil rights law enforcement. And what is so perverse
Reverend,
about
Pike, Ted, could I ask you to stop just a minute here? I'm getting a crackling.
Okay, I'll put my receiver just a little farther away. Is that a little better?
I don't know. Try it.
Okay. The perverse thing about these hate laws is that they have a very twisted, perverse definition of hate. Now, we know what Webster's Dictionary says about hate, how it defines it.
No, I don't. How does it define it?
Well, it defines it as some very acrimonious, angry, contemptuous attitude toward we might have toward other people, that we would despise them even to the point of not even saving them if they were drowning. I'm elaborating a little bit, but it's utter contempt, utter hatred for another person.
Or in other words, it isn't like they don't define hate as a deep dislike for something or somebody. It's the definition is about somebody.
Yes, it's utter contempt. Now, that's the biblical definition, and the Bible is certainly against hate. But what these hate laws, how they define hate is a very, very different thing, and it basically means bias against homosexuality, bias against certain identifiable protected groups, such as homosexuals and Jews and so on, is hate. And when that bias is coupled with some kind of a crime, small or great, it becomes a hate crime. Now, this is very twisted, and obviously that means that these laws are targeting evangelical Christians, because Christians adhere to the scriptural description of homosexuality as an abomination, and therefore, since the Bible is very biased against homosexuals, when Christians adhere to that, they are by definition in violation of these federal definitions in Canada, Europe, and in the United States. And therefore, they are ripe for persecution. And we are finding this is being acted out very graphically in Pennsylvania. On October 10th, 11 Christians were doing nothing more than preaching and singing and holding up signs at one of the largest gay pride coming out events in the nation. It was called Outfest. Thousands of homosexuals paraded in the streets, and suddenly the hate crimes police unit of the Philadelphia Police Department descended upon them, handcuffed them, put them in the paddy wagon, then took them off to the Philadelphia Justice Center jail, where they spent 21 hours there. They were charged with 8 crimes, 3 felonies, and 5 misdemeanors.
Do you have the details on the charges?
Excuse me?
Do you have the details?
Yes, I do. Actually,
I'd be interested, and I think our listeners would.
Yes. Now, they were charged with criminal conspiracy,
Criminal conspiracy.
Criminal conspiracy, possession of instruments of crime, reckless endangerment of another person, ethnic intimidation, riot, failure to disperse, disorderly conduct, and obstructing highways. Now, there was extensive video footage made of this whole occasion by a California film company, and none of those things are apparent. The Christians were passively preaching and exhorting on the fringes of a huge crowd, and in no way causing riots or endangerment or anything like that. And yet they were arrested under the Pennsylvania so-called anti-hate law or the anti-intimidation law.
Okay. Now, hasn't the U.S. Congress been working, or have they passed their hate laws already?
Well, here's the situation in Congress.
Give us a background here, please.
This huge federal hate bill has been submitted three times in the past 4 years. It's been defeated three times, and I've been working hard to defeat it, along with some other dedicated talk show hosts. We worked very hard this summer, and we were able to defeat it in conference on October 8th. Now, unfortunately, the House of Representatives, in a symbolic, non-binding vote, voted a 213-186 in favor of the bill.
What does that mean, symbolic, non-binding?
Well, here's the situation. You see, this bill had been attached as an amendment, as a rider on a huge arms bill. It was kind of hidden, hanging on the underbelly of a huge pork of a huge arms bill, you see.
They're good at that.
They move these things in secretly and quietly as riders on some bill that's totally irrelevant to what they're wanting to get through. And so that meant that the Senate approved this as a rider on the huge arms appropriations bill, H.R. 4200, and it kind of quietly went through the Senate. It was approved by the Senate 65-33, and then it went into conference in the fall, in October, and a small group of dedicated conservative Republicans in the House Majority Leadership was able to appoint conferees who would be loaded against the hate bill as it went into conference between the House and the Senate.
Okay.
As to whether it would be included in the big federal arms bill. So a minority of Republicans were able to defeat it in conference in the
That's
fall.
That's good. I'd like to explain just briefly for our listeners who aren't, because it takes some time to learn about this stuff unless you are really involved. What he's talking about, a conference committee, folks, when the House passes a bill and the Senate passes a companion bill, but they're not exactly the same, they go into conference and they come out with a new bill, combining sometimes, or they might adopt one or the other. But the conference, those conference committees are deadly, aren't they, Ted?
Yes, they are. But
yes.
Fortunately, we have some good people
that
in the House
good.
Majority Leadership, and they were able, through their power, to stack it basically with good people from Mississippi, Texas, and some of the southern states and so on, and they were able to defeat the hate bill in conference on October 8th.
Okay, now here's a question for you. How many states have passed hate crime bills?
Well,
do you know?
You're talking about the state.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Well, we have two issues here. We have the huge federal bill, which will provide a massive federal hate bureaucracy invading states' rights. That's one issue. The other issue is the fact that the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, who is behind all of this so-called anti-hate legislation, has convinced 48 out of the 50 states.
Okay, there you go.
To adopt their own version of a model anti-hate bill.
Thank you. Well, this is what I have told our listeners before, and you're just confirming it, because I used to pay very close attention to what was going on in the U.S. Congress, because I thought that's where we were supposed to do, because of the phony conservative mail I got.
Yes.
But anyway, one of the things I noticed Okay, we know that under the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 says what the U.S. Congress has the power to do. I think the 17th clause, or paragraph there, says that the Congress shall legislate in all matters whatsoever for the federal zone, which would be Washington, D.C., and territories and possessions. And they know, what I have realized, they know where the power, you know, what power they actually have. And so what happens, and I saw this happening with the gun bills, that the U.S. Congress will be working on a gun bill, which they have no right to legislate in the states under the Constitution. And then I would notice that all of the states would start passing gun, anti-gun laws that mirrored what the U.S. Congress had never even got passed yet.
Uh-huh.
And so, see, the thing is, for example, with when they take your, like if somebody has got a drug crime and they take your property and that, what the heck is that called? It starts with...
Seizure?
It's seizure, forfeiture bills.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the states, excuse me just a minute. I get a, okay, there we go. The states all have their own asset forfeiture laws, and they are, most of them are even more, are stronger and cover more territory than does the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, Ted, whatever the U.S. Congress does in this matter is not going to make it isn't going to make any difference because the states have the laws.
Well, that's largely true, except that what the federal government provides is a huge umbrella anti-hate bureaucracy uniting law enforcement, both federal and state, in a huge united octopus-like bureaucracy.
Yeah, this is true.
That is at the basically in the control of the ADL. They have made a very privileged position for themselves as the definers of hate for the local police, the FBI, the Justice Department, so on. And they're in the driver's seat of this whole thing from the very beginning to the end. Now, what
happened? And you can bet they're the ones that promoted them in the state.
Oh, exactly. And in fact, I followed it very closely. Back in 1988, I began my researches on efforts by the ADL to create an anti-hate law for America. And in 1988, they held a national so-called model anti-hate law competition to law students in the United States. They solicited proposals for a model anti-hate law.
Wow.
And the winner of that was Joseph Ribicoff, a Jewish law student from Whittier College in California. And his proposal was very frightening.
Uh-huh,
he proposed that any organization that showed any film which was critical of homosexuality should be indicted, the leadership should be indicted, and anyone who remained a member of that organization would be indicted, too, just for showing a video of an anti-homosexual film. And the ADL thought that was a wonderful idea.
Yeah, of course.
And they created their model anti-hate law kind of out of that Hofstra conference in 1988. And then they went to work throughout the 90s selling this to all of the state legislators. That's 48 out of the 50. Florida and Wyoming desisted. They didn't want the ADL hate law. But Pennsylvania, California, Idaho, they're pretty much all the same.
Florida and Wyoming, did you say?
Yeah, they have held out and not adopted the ADL model.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. And just recently, Georgia threw theirs out because it was too broad, but they want to adopt a new one that's more specific.
But Georgia right now actually...
Georgia is without a hate law at the moment.
Okay, so for our Florida listeners... Anybody in Wyoming and in Georgia, listen up, folks, and watch it.
Yeah.
Because we know that it can be stopped at a state level much easier than at a federal level. And just because the federal government passes a law does not mean that the state has to.
Yeah.
The federal government cannot command the states in those matters.
Well, if the federal law is passed, the federal government will have absolute power to command the
Not in those states that don't pass it, Ted.
Well,
I want to give you an example. I know this because I was so involved, and this is how come I learned so much from my own practical experience. I want you to think about Alabama. The federal EPA mandated that all states have to put MTBE in the gas.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Guess what Alabama did? They said, no, we're not going to do it. We are not going to do it. They didn't do it. Now, I don't know if they've done it since, but I am asserting here that, and because I know it, because I've seen it happen. It's just like the use of their ozone. You remember when ozone was outlawed?
Uh-huh.
Well, Arizona, I actually have the bill. And I have the bill that was signed by all the legislators that voted to pass it in Arizona. They said that our research shows us that ozone is not a threat to the system, and that we are going to manufacture it and we are going to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the rights that the states have if they would only exercise the right, Ted.
Yes, that's very encouraging. The writing of the federal bill certainly gives the impression that there is no exception.
I know it.
But for the federal bill, and that's where the momentum is coming from on the federal level. But it would certainly be encouraging if the states could do that.
And they could.
What I think we need to propose to our listeners everywhere is that local people form committees to begin to try to repeal these ADL hate laws in
the
states.
Yes, and if Georgia did it, it can be done.
Yes, it can.
Well, we know it can be done, but it has been done, and it does give hope to people.
Yes.
So this is something I want you to know this. Remember when Hillary Clinton was behind closed doors designing the national healthcare system?
Uh-huh, yes.
Well, okay, a group of doctors, the Physicians and Surgeons Association,
uh-huh,
sued them. And they won. Well, what they won was the fact that it was unlawful for them to have been doing this behind closed doors.
Yes.
So they had to make all of their records public. Well, the public records are available in the archives in Washington, D.C., of course.
Uh-huh.
So who's going to see them? Well, some people did. And Linda Liotta, a lady who lived in Maryland, happened to find a memo that was sent. It's in our website in the States' Rights section, Ted,
uh-huh,
at sweetliberty.org. Sent a memo to the Justice Department from the healthcare working group and said, can the federal government command the states to enter into a national healthcare program? And the Justice Department wrote back and said, no. The 10th Amendment has settled that question. However, listen to this. It said that the states can be bribed, encouraged, bribed, and blackmailed. Now, that's what they do. That's how they do it.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
Uh-huh. Well, this big federal hate bill, despite what you're saying, they intend to establish a dominance and a right to intrude in a local Justice Department,
yes,
Attorney General's rights to make any kind of decisions about so-called hate crimes issues. In fact, if you read the text of the Local Law Enforcement Enhancement Act, it gives the federal government, if the federal government doesn't like the outcome, the verdict of a hate crimes trial on the state level, it gives the federal government the right to intervene and to presumably,
uh-huh,
overthrow that verdict and get the kind of verdict that they want.
Is this a real long, many-paged bill or section?
Not terribly long.
Then I'd like to read it because
it's extremely, extremely phony and extremely,
yeah,
contrived. I can't believe how any intelligent person could actually read it and believe that there was a case for this massive overlay of,
yeah,
federal control, especially when they already have so many states with hate laws and the fact that the local laws against threat and vandalism and assault and all of those are perfectly adequate to do the job of punishing hate crimes in the state.
They already exist. You will find probably someplace in there that says something about money that the state will get if slash land. Okay.
Yeah, this is an appropriate...
Well, that's the encouragement, bribing, and threatening.
Yeah.
And so once the state passes the bill, and if the federal government passes it, and the state accepts money from the federal government, the courts have ruled that if the government is paying, the government has a right, you know, to, in other words, insert their power within it. That isn't what they said, but it's called federal money, and that's how come the federal government gets involved. It's the only way. The state always has to acquiesce, Ted.
Yes. Well, the appropriations for hate crimes, education, et cetera, and enforcement are very prominent in this bill, and it's exactly consistent with what you're saying.
They did that with the Brady Bill. That's when I discovered this, when finally the light dawned. The Brady Bill was only 31 pages.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the Brady Bill, it said, any state that doesn't pass this within the Sunset Clause, I think they called it, within a certain length of time, will not be given the money that we would award for the new policeman. Remember, Clinton said he was going to give he was going to give billions of dollars so that they could get more police on the streets.
Yes.
Well, the states, any state that wouldn't pass the Brady Bill, wouldn't get that funding. And when I read that, I said, oh, my God. See, because I was in that same mindset that if the federal government made it a law, it was a federal law. And that's when I found out it wasn't, Ted.
Yes. Well, what we have to do now is to have a massive public upheaval of protest, because this bill will become law in the spring. We have an overwhelming majority of the Senate and the House who have declared themselves in favor of passage. And Teddy Kennedy and Gordon Smith, et cetera, are promising to reintroduce it in the spring, February, March of every year, every other year or so, they introduce it. And we just have to blitz our the president in his comment line and the our elected people in Congress and let them know we are not going to stand for this Big Brother anti-hate bureaucracy being established, taking away our free speech.
Yes, and I'm so appreciative of the work that you've done on this and bringing the alert to people.
I wonder, could I just give out the president's comment line?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you see, what we have to do is presume that Congress may go ahead and pass this bill in the spring. The president, actually, when he was governor of Texas, rejected the ADL anti-hate law. And he seems to know the issues surrounding that. And, well, anyway, he rejected it and delayed it in Texas. And if we could, you could call the president at his comment line. It's area 202-456-1111. That's area 202-456-1111. And just tell him two important things. Number one, four Christians, for nothing more than preaching the gospel, are now indicted as hate criminals under Pennsylvania's hate law. Don't approve the big federal hate law this spring. That's a very simple message.
Okay.
And also, there's a real handy for Congress. It's a toll-free number.
Okay, you better hold this, because we're going to take a 60-second break here.
Okay.
And when the music starts, it over... floods our voices.
Okay.
So I don't want you to give a number that they don't hear. The music sounds... I'm not even hearing music. Maybe Nicholas has changed this, and I hope so. But we'll wait here, because I'm not really sure if the music is playing or we're just not hearing it.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
And folks, when you visit the SweetLiberty.org website, if you haven't been in our states' rights section, please go there. It's easy to find. When you go in, if you scroll down a little ways, you'll see a box, a place that says "Don't miss our issues sections," and there's a little drop-down box, and you can find the one that says states' rights and hit go there, and you will understand, truly understand, the pecking order here, and it isn't that the federal government has usurped the rights, the power that the states actually have in the Constitution. It is that the states have acquiesced and given over their power. And I can tell you from my own experience, 93, 94, 95, working at a state level, that you can make things happen and you can stop terrible things, because in 93, we stopped the CONCON, the Constitutional Convention, resolution in 12 states simultaneously. And for your information, 32 of the 34 states required to call for a constitutional convention had already been passed, and at that time only two more states had to do it, and they had 12 states that had introduced and brought to hearings the CONCON resolution, and it was stopped in all 12 states.
Yes.
And in 1995, when they tried the Conference of States, because they couldn't get it done in 93, the Conference of States was a backdoor attempt at a constitutional convention, and they took it out of the box by the second week in January. 12 states had already passed it. And when we got on top of it, not another state passed it. It was stopped, folks. And I want you to know, this was a plan of the big boys. They had the oil money behind it. And even, what's her name, Margaret Thatcher, they were going to hold their Conference of States in historic Philadelphia, where they did the first damage. With the Articles of Confederation, when the Constitution was framed. And Margaret Thatcher, according to Alan Watt, there was a newspaper article that she had made an announcement that she would be out of the country in October because she was going to a very important conference in Philadelphia. That's how important this was to these people. And folks, it was stopped. It was stopped at a state level, so I want you to know that it can be done. And we all know that with God, all things are possible.
Yes.
And it was certainly divine intervention all the way through it, Ted.
Yes. Well, I'm hoping that our listeners can immediately begin to call members of Congress, and not just the members of Congress from their own state, but go to the government website and get the names of the new members of Congress, and particularly Republicans, need to be contacted with the same message that four Christians are now indicted under Pennsylvania's hate law for doing nothing but preaching the gospel, and don't pass the big federal hate bill this spring. We need to unconvince quite a number of Republicans to come back over and stand against this Big Brother legislation. Anyway, the number for the toll-free number for members of Congress is 1-800-TEX-LASSO. That's spelled T-E-X-L-A-S-O. Only one S in lasso. It's 1-800-TEX-LASSO. And even if you don't know your senator or your congress people from your state, you just give them your zip code and they'll put you in immediate contact with them.
Right. Exactly.
And what we need, you see, is an upheaval of protest. What they're doing, you see, is always in the back door. It's always secretive. And this is what's happening in Philadelphia. Have you, our listeners, been hearing all about what's going on in Philadelphia? Of course not. There's a conspiracy of silence in the liberal media and almost a total silence even in the conservative and religious media about this. And I'm sounding the alarm, and alternative methods of getting the truth out are being employed, like Jackie and other very faithful stewards of the truth. But we need to have a grassroots protest about what's happening, because if these four Christians in Philadelphia, they have been indicted. They were indicted last Tuesday. Four of them were indicted, and the total they could spend in prison would be 47 years for doing nothing but preaching the gospel. If we let them be convicted, and the trial is ostensibly to be held on January 5th. The judge was a little unclear whether he would have another hearing or go directly to trial, but we have to presume that January 5th will be the trial of these four defendants. And the justice system of Philadelphia is so corrupt that
of Philadelphia.
We can expect a certain conviction of them.
Yes. Well, we're getting the popping again, Jack.
Okay, I'll hold it one little farther
but
away.
Do,
is that okay?
Yes, and do speak nice and loudly. But
okay.
Yeah, I think you might be just a little close at that time.
All right.
Would you be willing to repeat the charges against these people?
I certainly would, and maybe I can make a little commentary. Under these ADL hate laws, they have two ingredients for what constitutes the crime of intimidation or a hate crime. You have to have bias motivation on one hand, and you have to have some kind of a violation of law on the other.
Bias motivation?
That would
be a thought crime.
That's right. And under our traditional justice system, as you know, Jackie, it's very simple. You've got to have physical evidence of some kind of crime, bruises, broken bones,
corpus
blood.
Delicti.
But under the hate laws, you don't have to have necessarily that kind of physical proof. You have to have evidence that somebody has been biased and that has motivated some kind of crime.
And that's somebody's opinion, whether it was biased motivation.
That's right.
That's why I called it a thought crime.
That's right. And just let me recount to you how this preliminary hearing went on Tuesday. It started with Chief of Police Tiano saying that the defendants jeopardized the safety of those gathered at the homosexual rally. He asserted that their inflammatory language tended to incite the resulting riot of about 500 sodomite attendees. Such language, he contended, constitutes, quote, reckless endangerment of another person.
Was there a riot?
No, well, the homosexuals were very angry because of the truth that was coming through the bullhorn. And further, the district attorney, Charles Ehrlich, said that this bullhorn was an instrument, a weapon of reckless endangerment, a violation of the law, you see. And so, you see, these Christians were obviously biased against homosexuality, as the Bible is, but he claims that they were using their bullhorn to send hate messages, which were a threat to the safety and inciting a riot among the sodomites, you see. So these laws are so ambiguous and so open to creativity on the part of the hate police. They don't require physical evidence anymore of a crime. All they require is evidence that you have been biased, and that is hate. That is pretext for first arresting you and then taking your time to figure out how you have violated some kind of law. And what this does, it quickly entraps Christians in all kinds of litigation and ambiguous accusations against them. And in countries like Sweden and Canada, where Christians have been indicted under these laws, they have been inveigled into tremendous court costs and misery because of the vagueness of these laws.
Do you think that the people who were there opposing this outfest, do you think they were aware that there were hate crime laws there? Is that a hate crime law exists in Pennsylvania?
Oh, yes, they were aware of that, but in all of the states that have the ADL hate laws, there's the impression given that our constitutional rights will be respected and there are safeguards. But what we're seeing in Philadelphia is that when the hate crimes police want to move, they go ahead and they indict, and they don't worry about our constitutional rights. They just go ahead and throw us in the paddy wagon, and then they trump up all kinds of imaginary violations of the law.
Yes.
Now, if Michael Markovich, the leader of this group, had been banging a homosexual over the head with the bullhorn, that truly would have been an instrument of crime.
Yeah, it would have been, yeah.
But to speak
at least
through
battery.
The bullhorn, that is not making that an instrument of crime. But the justice system is so biased, the judge, originally the judge who was going to adjudicate this was a conservative, and yet predictably he was removed, and an extremely liberal, pro-sodomite, liberal judge was put in his place who agreed with these accusations by the district attorney and the chief of police and went ahead and indicted the leader, Michael Markovich, on all eight counts because he used his bullhorn as an instrument of crime, as an act of ethnic intimidation, he called it, against the homosexuals.
Okay.
And then there were three other men there who have slightly lesser crimes of conspiracy to commit ethnic intimidation, which is lesser because they didn't actually wield the bullhorn. The women were let go, a teenager was let go, and an old man was let go. But what we have now here is four Christians who've done nothing but speak the truth and exercise their First Amendment rights being held for possible penalties of up to 47 years in prison. And how this can happen in the United States of America is beyond me. And
well,
it isn't.
No, it isn't beyond you, because I've read your book and I've seen your videos, Dad. And I know that you know why it's happening. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Jackie.
Yes.
Who's this man speaking here?
It is Reverend Ted Pike. And who is this speaking?
This is Paul from South Jersey.
Hi, Paul.
What these people should do is claim to be American sovereigns and ask the judge for his oath, accept the judge's oath of office. The judge has to go back into common law, and that's everything will be dropped.
Paul,
yeah.
Would you want to give your phone number in case they would like to contact you?
Yeah.
Okay. Would you take this down, Ted?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. It's 1-856.
856.
848-2073.
2073.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I would suggest, Paul, that you get in touch
with a lot of people.
Excuse me. Just a minute, Paul. Wait.
Because she's got a girl out of jail, the same thing.
Okay, hold it just a sec. I'm sorry, honey. Ted, the way I'm set up here,
uh-huh.
You can hear him, but he can't hear you.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I would have to relay, or you would make your suggestion after he's off. Do you want me to relay?
Okay.
What did you suggest to him?
I would suggest that...
Just a minute, Paul.
I would suggest that Paul... I'm not an expert on these things, but if you would like to get in touch with the attorneys for Michael Markovich and his group...
They probably wouldn't... They probably wouldn't even listen.
Maybe, that's all I can suggest.
Okay, well, I was thinking maybe you would like to give his number to Michael.
My number?
Paul's number. Is he out on bond?
Who's that?
Michael is, yes.
Michael's out on bail. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Why don't you just give the number to him, and let him make a decision whether he'd like to contact Paul.
Okay.
Would you do that, Ted?
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
Who's that, Michael Markavich?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay, I heard about the key. I'm
okay.
Ready to go to the room.
Okay. Well, then maybe he'll call you, Paul.
Okay.
And thank you for your caring and your consideration.
Oh, man, these people are going crazy, I'll tell you.
I know they are, honey.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jackie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I should have warned you, Ted. I'm jury-rigged here. I'm Rube Goldberg.
Uh-huh.
I've got a Rube Goldberg set up here.
Well, the thing about these state hate laws is that, you know, some people would say, well, thank God that I don't live in Pennsylvania under a law like this. Well, the truth of the matter is you probably do.
There, I believe, unless the man has been released, although I don't doubt, I don't know, I read of a case in Texas, and there were newspaper articles on it, but of course they would have been local, so never made the major media, but in Texas. A situation happened with between a white couple and a black man, and my memory serves me, if it does, they were coming out of a restaurant. I think the black man, maybe she bumped into him, something, but he accosted her. He literally grabbed her, and the husband intervened, and as they were walking away, the husband mumbled to the wife, and he probably said, you know, the damn nigger or something like that, but whatever it was, he was found guilty and was serving 5 years in prison.
Oh, really?
For saying that.
I haven't heard of that one.
Well,
that's very similar to one in Texas, in which a...
That's what I said, Texas.
Excuse me, in Idaho, where in Idaho, several years ago, there was a very heated football game, and the umpire, who was a large black man of about 6'4", tall, about 275 pounds or so on, he was being booed by the crowd, and the woman reporter for the local newspaper snapped his picture in his rage, and he was so angry that when she turned away, he grabbed her behind, he grabbed her around the neck and wrestled her camera off of her, giving her neck burns. And her husband rushed to her defense and used the N-word against the black referee and told him he was going to kick his butt. And immediately he was indicted as a hate criminal for that.
Yes.
And he came very close to spending 5 years in prison under Idaho's ADL hate law.
Yes.
And I think he actually spent only a month, but it was only through the creativity of Edgar Steele, the feisty attorney. I was in contact with him during that time. But Idaho's law is just like Pennsylvania's, just like California's, just like, and so on. And so none of us are really safe if we live in these states that have adopted hate laws.
And you know, the one thing that I really appreciated about your video when I was first watching it, the hate crimes video.
Uh-huh.
It was basically centered and focused on the homosexuality. But I thought to myself, well, this isn't where it's at, though. This isn't their ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is anti-Semitic laws, and you covered that beautifully.
Yeah. Well, the ADL is the civil liberties arm of the huge Jewish religious fraternal and religious... an educational organization called B'nai B'rith International.
It is a brotherhood, isn't it?
They have 2,300 lodges worldwide. They have 710,000 Jewish members. They span all the branches of Judaism. And the B'nai B'rith International has been the primary instigator, the cause of hate laws being established, not only in Canada, which is very well recorded, but in Australia and New Zealand and all the countries, most of the countries now of Europe. This is their baby. They've invented it, and they have lobbied and made this happen worldwide. And one of the problems I have had in fighting the federal hate bill is that they have so well publicized, the ADL, B'nai B'rith, has so well publicized their role in the creation of hate laws that broadcasters know that. And then they know that if they expose hate laws, they automatically bring out the fact that this venerable Jewish organization is behind that.
And Jews control the media.
That's right.
And they'll lose their jobs.
That's right. And you see, the ADL, back in 1988, the ADL, in testimony before Congress, defined anti-Semitism for us. They've defined what hate is, and they've also defined anti-Semitism. They said that criticism of matters Jewish constitutes evidence of anti-Semitism. And so if you criticize a venerable Jewish organization or its legislative agenda of hate crimes, the ADL sees red and sees that as an act of anti-Semitism and then will tar you with that label. And that's why we have such a tremendous conspiracy of silence in all the media, including the right-wing conservative media. Everybody's terrorized by the ADL.
You and I spoke briefly this evening, and I mentioned to you about the phony conservative, Christian conservative leadership.
Yes.
Well, they include, and I noticed that, of course, on your Unholy Alliance, you're showing Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two longtime members of the Council for National Policy.
Uh-huh.
But you would probably be shocked at the names that I could name for you. They're all part of this program.
Yeah.
And we have a section in the website at sweetliberty.org titled Wolves in Sheep's Clothing.
Uh-huh.
And it's all about all these phonies.
Yes.
And they're the ones, Betty Mills, who was my friend and my mentor, the statement that she made so aptly was that everybody blames the liberal democratic side, the left, for what has happened to America, but she said it could never have happened if the right, the so-called conservative and Christian conservative leadership had not held the door wide open.
Yes.
And Charlotte Iserbeek, who's a lady, I don't know if you're aware of Charlotte, very, very astute in the educational arena. And she made a point that there are hundreds of these people. Phyllis Schlafly is one of the most famous, and Dobson and D.J. Kennedy, and the list goes on and on and on. But she said, with all of the hundreds of people and their hundreds of millions of dollars that they take in every year, and the millions of Americans who trust in and believe in them,
mm-hmm.
that if they all got together and did, we could be out of the UN in 30 days.
Yes.
That's how powerful they are. It's called the Council for National Policy. What does that tell you, Ted?
Yes. Well, when, you see, as we will be talking about in another broadcast tomorrow night, Jackie, the Christians have gone and they have basically bid Godspeed to evil men. They have endorsed the terrible persecutions of the Zionists against the Palestinians over the past century. And Scripture says that when you bid Godspeed to an evil man, you become a partaker of his evil deeds. And I'm afraid what we've seen is that the consciences of Christian evangelicals in America and their leaders have become so numbed that they have lost their keen sense of moral values and of right and wrong.
I think where it came from, you mentioned in the Unholy Alliance, you mentioned that 100 years ago that Christianity strayed.
Yes.
Well, 100 years ago, the what was the name, the Bible? The Bible that they use, the study, Bible study.
Oh, the Schofield.
The Schofield,
uh-huh.
Yes. Schofield, do you know the background on that man?
Yes, I understand.
He was taken under wing by Samuel Untermeyer,
uh-huh.
and introduced to very wealthy, influential Jews, and they took him to Europe, and they funded the Schofield Reference Bible.
Yes.
And it was published by the Oxford Press, which I understand, or at least I've read, is a Rothschild publication.
Yes.
And so that today the seminaries are teaching the religion of the Jews.
Yes. Well, tragically, these evangelical leaders, I was just talking at length with Michael Markovich today, and he was telling me that the evangelical organizations are not coming to his aid. Now, I had thought that before the preliminary hearing, before the indictment, they would have a right perhaps to wait and see what happened. But now these Christians are being indicted, and lo and behold, these Christian organizations, which should be standing on the wall and raising a hue and cry about their brethren nearly going, or perhaps going to prison, are absolutely silent. And, you know, I can go down the list. Trinity Broadcasting, CBN,
All
of the big ones, Michael tells me, are not getting in touch with him, not supporting him, not letting them on their talk shows and so on.
And you're shocked.
And I should mention, as we're
naive as I used to be, Ted.
Yeah. You know, Jackie, you have been blessed by this video, Hate Laws Making Criminals of Christians. I would like to take the opportunity to invite all of our listeners to get a copy of that. We need to show that video.
You go right ahead.
And so on.
You go right ahead and give the information, because we've got about 3 minutes left.
Okay. Yes, the video is 80 minutes long. It's a terrific tool. It tells the whole story about the evil history and intentions of so-called anti-hate laws. You can get a copy of that real fast by just calling me at 503-631-3808. That's 503-631-3808. If you have your credit card, I'll take that and fire one off immediately to you first class. Or you can come to our website, which is www.truthtellers.org. That's www.truthtellers.org, and you can actually watch 7 minutes of streaming video of that video and other of our videos, and you can order it online with your credit card. And of course, I just want to remind also to calls going in to members of Congress and to the President, and that Congress hotline, the toll-free line, is 1-800-TEX-LASSO. That's TEXLASO. And call Republicans, preferably, because the Democrats are absolutely sold out in favor of the hate bill. But we want to turn the minds of the Republicans. You can also call the President's comment line at 202-456-1111.
All right, and we're out of time here.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
The music is playing. You're coming back tomorrow night.
You bet.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, and I will see you tomorrow evening.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA, 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
If you can hear my...